What happens when you trade your heritage for a mess of pottage? Find out next on Principles and Policies. Hello, I'm Chuck Michaelis. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the Executive Director of Camp American. And we are currently waiting for Barry Sheets to arrive. So in his absence, I'm acting as the host here on Principles and Policies. And we're going to be discussing today an issue that is getting a lot of traction of late. And if you haven't heard of it, you will hear of it. And you'll be especially versant in it by the end of this program. I have with me today Molly Smith from Cleveland Right to Life. And if you are completely unaware of what's going on, well, I'm going to let Molly introduce herself and give us kind of an opening and to let us know exactly what's going on her end of this. So join us, Molly. Welcome to Principles and Policies.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the program. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with all of you about what's going on in Cleveland.
Well, I'm kind of interested in I know that Cleveland Right to Life has been active for quite some time. In fact, I was just up in Akron for the Christian Home Educators of Ohio.
Okay.
And while I was out there driving around looking for some place to eat, because as you know, if you've ever been in Akron, they roll the sidewalk up at about 5 o'clock, especially on the weekend. And so I was out driving around and I listened to your radio show.
Okay.
While I was out driving around. And it was very interesting, as always. I've heard you from time to time because I've tuned in up there on the internet and listened to you and Pastor Ernie and some of the people up there. What radio station are you on up there?
We are on Salem Radio, Cleveland Salem Radio, 1220 AM or 1440. If you're in Akron, you're listening to us on 1440. But it's one of the Cleveland Salem stations.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about Cleveland Right to Life and what it is you do and a little bit about your background, because I know people out there are saying, gee, she doesn't sound like she's from the Midwest.
All right. Well, we'll start with Cleveland Right to Life. We are probably one of the longest existing pro-life, right-to-life groups in the country, actually. If I remember rightly, we were formed in 1970, somewhere around there, just before Roe v. Wade. So we've been around for a long time. I personally have been with Cleveland Right to Life since the year 2000. I served first as executive director till 2008. And then I was executive director till 2010 and then became president of the organization. So for the past 3 years, I've been serving as president of Cleveland Right to Life. Our organization is a pretty unusual right to life organizations because of the multitude of different things that we do, Chuck. We hold rallies on a regular basis. We're one of the few groups, I think, since Columbus Right to Life maybe started doing this too, but we have a March for Life in January. We have a youth rally for life. We regularly are approached by religious organizations to hold, particularly since the religious freedom issue has come up. We are normally the go-to person to do those types of things for the community around, for Northeast Ohio. We represent all 8 counties within Northeast Ohio. We have membership from across all eight counties. We are one of the largest groups, right-to-left groups in Ohio. Ourselves in Cincinnati are probably the two biggest groups in Ohio. We also have been very successful in being a little bit entrepreneurial in the things that we've done. We have our wonderful Truth Booth, which is a mall. You actually go, it's a 3D image of the developing child in the womb. That is played in a loop, a 3.5-minute loop, and we put it up on televisions and we display them in malls. So across, we have them, I think, right now in about 26 states, and I think that's like 4 or 5 provinces in Canada. So we've been very successful with that. And again, you know, we're basically, because we open our arms and say, if you've got a good pro-life message and you've got something that's really going to help us to change the culture, then come and talk to us, and if we can help you, we will. This is exactly how we got the Truth Booth. A couple came to us, asked us to help them, and so we folded them in underneath us. We've also recently started probably the largest, and we'd love to see you and Barry there, Chuck, in 2014. But we've recently started an educational symposium.
Okay. I'd definitely like to know a little bit more about that educational symposium.
It's amazing. It's what we started off in 2010. We had Hugh Hewitt, Dinesh D'Souza, Archbishop Charles Shapuka came in. You name it. We had 12 very, very star Parker. And since that time, it has grown. Until this year, we actually sold out, completely sold out. All our meals were sold out. Every single breakout session was sold out. All our booth space was sold out. And we had over 1,300 people arrive for the 2 days. It was
Wow, that's a conference.
Phenomenal. But quite a conference. So we need to have you guys there next time around. You can come.
That. Excellent. Wow, that sounds great. Yeah, and I'm betting we probably would have come if we'd known a little bit more about it. Now we know about it. Now we can come. Well, this is a very Cleveland is obviously a very active Right to Life chapter. In fact, it sounds to me like you're one of the most active Right to Life chapters that I've heard about. I know Cincinnati is also very active, and there are Geauga is quite active as well. Tell me a little bit about what the problem is really between the Cleveland Right to Life and the national, because I'm reading that you got some rather shall we say heavy-handed communications from the National Right to Life group.
Yeah, I guess you could call it heavy-handed. I think before I go there, we need to also help people to understand how the Right to Life structure works, Chuck, within the nation. I think it's very important that people get into the details about what happened. All pro-life, all Right to Life organizations, all local chapters, so anything that you've got, like Geauga County, Cleveland Right to Life, Cincinnati Right to Life, Portage County Right to Life, all of those smaller, and they are not chapters. They're small, independent, autonomous organizations. They use the name Right to Life, and their focus, for the most part, is all the same. We are all completely independent, as you probably know from whichever chapter you live under, whichever Right to Life group you live under. We've got to change the way we speak about this, because this is where the confusion comes in. We are not chapters. We are not chapters of anything. Cleveland Right to Life has never been a chapter of any organization. What we do have, however, is an affiliation. We can choose to affiliate with our state Right to Life organization, which, of course, is Ohio Right to Life. And there have been times when we have disaffiliated and decided not to be affiliated with them. And there are times when we have, like we are presently, we work closely with Ohio Right to Life on several different issues. And we do consider ourselves, and we are in good standing with Ohio Right to Life, as an affiliate, which means exactly that. We work together with them on different issues. When there's something that's coming down the line that we need to know about, we can send it to them and they can get it out, or they can, and vice versa. Having cleared that up, now we need to understand what Ohio Right to Life is. Ohio Right to Life is part of a structure the same as the local groups, but they can choose or not choose to be affiliated with the National Right to Life, which is out of Washington, D.C. So they can choose to do that. Some of these state Right to Life groups don't affiliate with National. Here's what's happened, which is very, very unusual. As you know, Chuck, back in June, at the end of June, Cleveland Right to Life decided that after about an 18-month time period, we've been going back and forth and just looking into all of the different things that we know we need to do to improve and to promote the culture of life within our region, within our local area. And the thing we kept bumping up against was the fact that until the society at large understands the need for a strong family structure, we will continue the breakdown of our particular specific area, which is abortion, which is the one that we've been very focused on, we will continue to see abortions happening, and we will never see an overturn of Roe v. Wade. So the more we looked at this, the more we said, you know, this has always been the underlying principle of the right to life movement. It has always been the fact that everything is cornerstoned on the family. So we then started looking back at the history of the right to life movement and said, okay, back in when this was all formed in the early 70s, there was no serious threat to the family as such. This was always a given within the right to life movement that the family was the structure that we needed to work with. But now we're under incredible attack, as we all know. The family is under incredible attack. So we decided that the best way to bring this to the fore again and to say to people, here's what we are built on. We are built on the family. We need to put that into our mission statement. So we did. We put it into our mission statement. We spoke to several different experts, both locally and nationally. Some of them who absolutely agree with us that said you're going to have a lot of pushback, others that said this is exactly where you need to go. After discussion with our board and several different people we trusted, we improved, and I really make that difference. We improved our mission statement to bring in strong tradition of support for the traditional family. Now, that's where things started to get a little rocky. When we did that, we did get a little bit of pushback from some of the groups in the region. Ohio Right to Life was sort of saying, I don't know whether you should do this. It's going to create all kinds of problems. They weren't opposed to it. They did not tell us not to do it. They just, you know, they talked to us in the background, said that they probably would not do it, but we needed to be very sure that this is where we wanted to go. Well, we said, look, this is the principal thing. This is what God would, this is the way God intended for us to live as a society. And abortion comes out of this whole breakdown of the family. So within, I would say, whilst all that was happening, right in the middle of all of this happening, Senator, as we all know, came out, who has been a very strong opponent, voted for pro-life legislation, has sponsored several pro-life bills in the Senate, you know, worked very, very strongly with same time worked very strongly with the traditional with the pro-family movements, that and was always strong. Then we get back in, I think it must have been June or July.
Just for our listeners' sake, that was a statement that he was announcing, that something he'd known since 2011, that his youngest son had homosexual inclinations and was self-identifying as being homosexual. And Senator Portman, again, knew this actually while he was running for office in 2010 and had it confirmed in 2011, but waited until June or July, I think it was May or June of this year, to make a formal announcement. Coincidentally, just in time for the United States Supreme Court's review of two different cases, one dealing with the Federal Defense of Marriage Act and the other one dealing with California's Proposition 8 challenge on defending traditional marriage.
Absolutely. And so you know, in walks Cleveland Right to Life with their new mission statement saying that we oppose same-sex marriage. And, of course, this created all kinds of angst within the traditional Right to Life movement. We asked to meet with Senator Portman, which we did. We had a very good conversation with him, at which time he said that he was standing strong on where he stood. He said, you know, this was his family. He believed that this was a right that his son had, and that he didn't choose to be that way, and that's the way he was. And during the conversation, what also came up was the fact that he considered that his son had a right to if his son met somebody and wanted to get married, that was up to him to do that, and he would now support gay marriage, which he'd already said publicly, but further to that he would also support gay adoption, which just is one of the big reasons why Cleveland Right to Life felt we have to make the stand, and that we have to stand for traditional marriage. If we are going to be concerned about the child and the person, we have to stand for traditional marriage. We agreed to disagree. We went on our way. We made a very public statement about the fact that Cleveland Right to Life would no longer support Senator Portman as a senator for Ohio. This action, obviously, which we had no clue. I mean, we did get a little bit of coverage about it, et cetera, and we just moved on. I mean, it is what it is. We feel very strongly about this. We feel that this is part of the pro-life movement. You cannot separate out these two things. You cannot take the family and the child and marriage, traditional marriage, out from underneath the pro-life efforts. Unbeknownst to us, on July 17th, without a phone call, without an email communication, nothing, a letter was sent to us, to our office, from National Right to Life. Now, I have just explained how all of this works. We have never been affiliated as such with National. We have a sort of a tiered relationship with them affiliation-wise through Ohio Right to Life. In the letter, it stated to us that we have now been disaffiliated from them because of our strong support for traditional marriage, as well as our basically being nasty to Senator Portman. So we sort of went, what? And the way we heard about the fact that this letter had arrived was from other Right to Life groups. They got it. It must have come out to them at the same time as it was sent to us. So suddenly we started getting calls from pro-life leaders around the state, from Right to Life leaders from around the state, saying, what on earth is going on? And at that time I said, I have no clue. What people out there need to understand is that Cleveland Right to Life, for the fact that we are such a large organization, we do have a huge membership. We've got a huge footprint. We're very, very active in the region. We are also 100% volunteer, 100% volunteer. There's no paid staff in our organization. And part of what that does is that we have a mailing address that we send all our mail to, and maybe once or twice a week we go down and pick up the mail. So we hadn't even seen this letter yet when we were getting these calls. We hadn't received a phone call. We hadn't got an email. We hadn't seen a letter. So, of course, we then had somebody eventually emailed us a letter, the letter that was circulating. They emailed it to us, and this letter had come to one of their board members. It was a Right to Life group. It had been sent to one of their past board members by an aide in Senator Portman's office.
Well, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Considering the fact that really the gist of what Right to Life, National Right to Life, is saying, and I'm reading from a story in Cleveland.com, which is basically the Plain Dealer.
Plain Dealer, yeah.
that basically makes it look like they imply that Portman had nothing to do with it.
Well, Portman is maintaining that, and you know we have no proof. To be quite honest with you, Barry, we have no proof that they were, except that before. And I don't have the date that it was actually sent to this board member, but it was pretty soon after July 17th that it was sent to them.
You know, Molly, and I just want to just jump in here on a couple quick notes. Number one, whether or not they actually made the request to have this action taken, at the very least, what they're doing then is, basically it's akin to gossip and slander by sending this letter to other people rather than calling you and discussing it. Now, I'm not talking about National Right to Life, and they're doing the same thing, but I'm actually talking about Senator Portman's office. He met with you before, and he knows you guys have differences. He should have been calling you instead of just having an aide sending a copy of that letter out to other of your colleagues around the state. That actually strikes me as being probably one of the more onerous things in this tale so far.
Absolutely. You know, and there were so many parts and pieces of this that are absolutely bizarre. Honestly, Chuck and Barry, there are so many parts of this that are bizarre. This, as far as we know, is unprecedented. I don't know that National Right to Life has ever done this, ever. We can't seem to find any other evidence of this. That they would disaffiliate, send us this very rude letter disaffiliating us, and we're not even affiliated. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, that sounds like something out of George Orwell's 1984. It's the Disaffiliation Bureau. Yeah. Whether or not you're affiliated with us, we're disaffiliating you now.
Like the Twilight And you know, it's sad because as much as I'm laughing about it, it is very sad to see this happen, because I have continued to say this on every radio program that I've been on and every interview I've done since this has broken. The reason why we waited so long to be able to make this an effort was because we continued to get more and more pro-life groups and pro-life leaders contact us about the fact that they had received this exact copy. No explanation inside the letter. They were receiving letters, a direct mailing from National Rights to Life with just this letter folded in and given to them. There was no explanation, no nothing. When that started happening and our membership started to say, this is outrageous, this is an insult to all of us here in Northeast Ohio, that those of us that have worked so hard, you know, what on earth is going on? That's when, as a board, we decided that there was a need for us. We tried not to make this into a national event, but it has become a national event, because you cannot do that. There is, if we step back and let this happen, what about the next organization, the Right to Life group, that decides to formalize their position on the family, the child, and marriage? Are they going to do the same thing to them, and may they be intimidated? Is this an intimidation tactic on the part of National Rights to Life against any other groups within Ohio who we know are out there talking about this very issue, that they are also considering doing what we did? So there was an absolute need for us to go public with what has happened. And I think what has been unbelievable is that if National Rights to Life had not done this, this would probably have stayed within Ohio. It would not have gone nationwide. It would not have been a talking point across the nation with so many pro-lifers. We have had one. I have got hundreds and hundreds of emails that have come into me from California to New York to Massachusetts to Connecticut, from New Mexico, everywhere. I have had emails pouring into our inbox. Supporting what we've done and saying it's about time the pro-life movement gets this. Good for you guys. So this has in some ways has allowed us, God is so good. He is so good because he's taken this and used it for his glory.
Well, absolutely. His word promises us that what they intended for evil, he has used for good.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the whole story of Joseph and his brothers and being reunited in Egypt. What you meant for evil and for destruction, God has used for his glory.
Yes, yes.
And frankly, we're using it also, and Molly, this is the most important part, to not only shed light on the fact that politicians are getting away with having non-consistent biblical worldviews, non-consistent pro-life positions. I mean, you know, it would be one thing if the senator had just said that he wanted to support his son because his son has chosen this, destructive lifestyle. But it's another thing then to jump on the bandwagon and say, well, now I'm going to support the idea of homosexuals adopting. I guess he's trying to telegraph that his son and his son's partner, if he has a partner, are getting ready to file adoption papers, and so maybe he wants to get ahead of that one instead of being behind it.
You know, I don't know that that's the truth. From all accounts, his son, you know, is not in any relationship and I can't go there. But to your point, absolutely. If he had come out in strong support for his son and saying, you know, I accept where he's at, I love him just the same, which is what he said, he could have done all of that. Without putting himself in jeopardy of losing this Senate seat for the Conservatives, because I think that's what's going to happen. If they continue on down this route, the Senate seat, as far as I can see, will be lost.
And you brought up a good point there, him losing his seat. What I see happening here is that Portman is gathering around any allies he can find now. Quick, before this turns into something very ugly, because his internal polling data, I'm guessing, is showing that he's in real trouble.
Yeah.
When he runs again, what is it, in 16?
16, yeah.
That basically people aren't forgetting. You know, a lot of times people kind of forget.
Yeah.
And that people aren't forgetting, and that there are enough of us out there who are going to remind them and that his internal polling data probably doesn't look very good right now. And so he is doing anything he can to shore up support in the quote-unquote pro-life, pro-family community. Now, obviously, you are taking a pro-family stand, and National Right to Life is not taking a pro-family stand. And as you've stated, you cannot separate these issues. If God is sovereign and outlaws abortion, makes it absolutely against his law, then God is sovereign when he outlawed homosexual activity. And the fact is that this is the real question, because it's what it's showing is, if anybody who's thinking through this, Rob Portman is not thinking straight. He is a double-minded man who is unstable in all his ways. What else is he going to give up? And at what point is he going to say, well, my daughter is thinking about having an abortion, so I have to stand with her, and I think she ought to have the right to have an abortion if she wants it.
Yeah. Now, you know, and that has come up with him, and I both of you, that my heart is with them, with the whole Portman family. I cannot even imagine how difficult this has to be for all of them, that Senator Portman has had to make this his private life so public. I think maybe it was bad judgment at the time. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe he thought it through. I can't go to where he is. That's not for me to do. And as much as I have complete empathy for him and compassion for the family, having that, part of that is also standing for what is true. And what is true is that lifestyle, it's like anything else. And I said this to Senator Portman when we met with them. I have five grown children. They knew very well when they came home to my house, if they were coming into our house and was expecting to shack up with any of their significant others at the time, it was a no-no. And I was coming down hard on anybody that wanted to live that kind of lifestyle. Now, was I supposed to say, oh, my goodness, this is where my son or my daughter wants to be right now, and so I'm going to lose their friendship if I do that? No, you can't do that. You have to stand on what you know is right. So for me, it's the same type of thing. I'm not going to judge Senator Portman, but I cannot, in not judging him in the person, I can certainly judge the actions, and that's what we've done.
And the point is that regardless of his personal belief, he is a public figure,
exactly.
And as a public figure, he had taken what was supposedly a principled position prior to this of standing in favor of traditional marriage, but now has, instead of just saying, well, we have a situation in our family and I love and support my son and I will support him, but I still stand that the right, the just thing is a traditional marriage between a man and a woman. No, he abandoned that, jettisoned it to the side, and not only embraced homosexual pairings, but embraced what could only be considered the only way that a homosexual pair can build a quote-unquote family, and that is through adoption.
Yeah.
The only real way they can do it.
Yeah.
So that is where I would draw the line is with him as a public figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
As he has proven that, at least on this issue, and then it raises questions about others, as to whether or not he will be consistent on other positions.
Exactly
he takes.
Right.
Or is he going to be another, and I bring up the specter of John Kerry in the 2004 presidential elections, the whole image was of a waffle with tennis shoes
because
he couldn't hold to a position.
I voted against the Iraq war before I voted for it.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there is another whole issue here that I think that we also need to address in this, is that, and let's get back to the National Right to Life issues.
I was just about to come around to that, so go ahead, and I've got a couple of questions.
Okay. My concern here is that if National Right to Life cannot see how these two are linked, we've got a real problem at the national level. We've just discussed the adoption issue. How can our Christian adoption agencies are already being shut down? How can we go forward and be supportive of our pregnancy centers, our Christian pregnancy centers, who will not refer for adoptions, same-sex adoptions? Secondly, after Portman came, one of our local Jim Petro came out about his daughter, who is married now, and her wife her wife in wherever it is, Massachusetts, that they live, they have had their first child or were pregnant with their first child. How does that happen? But through surrogacy or in vitro fertilization. And it's definitely surrogacy. So they have had to, all of this, all now we're starting to really mess with God's plan and God's creation. This is beginning to get extremely messy. How is National Right to Life going to defend that one?
Well, obviously the same way that they defended this one. Anybody who doesn't toe the line, we disaffiliate and we try to embarrass publicly.
Yeah.
Now, and this is where I wanted to go to with this, Molly. Now, National Right to Life, Carol Tobias sent you that letter, right?
Yes.
But this wasn't a unilateral decision. They have a board. Am I correct?
That's right.
Now, their board is made up of, and now help me with this because I'm not so sure with National. Do they have a board representative from every state that they have a pro-life presence in?
You know, from what I understand, there are 50 members on the board. Anybody that is the president of a statewide Right to Life group becomes a board member of National.
Okay. Well, may I ask then, and you don't have to answer this, or you can just say you don't know. Ohio's board member, who would be the president of Ohio Right to Life, would have had to have voted on this particular measure and would have known about it prior to the letter going out. Did you ever receive a phone call or an indication from the state Ohio Right to Life director that this action was about to be taken against you?
To the best of my knowledge, the National Right to Life Committee, whoever it was that sent Carol Tobias, never ever referred, never ever went. Have we lost each other again?
No, we're here. We're here.
Okay. Never ever referred this to a board vote. And so Mike Gonadakis, who is the current member of the National Board, as far as I know, knew nothing about this. He knew about it when we knew about it.
Okay.
So you know, I will say that Ohio Right to Life has come out very strongly saying that they consider us still to be an affiliate. We still will work together. This makes no difference to them. We are affiliated to them, which makes this even more bizarre, because the only way we could be disaffiliated was if Ohio Right to Life said, "Molly, sorry, but you're done. Go."
Well, now I guess that raises an interesting question on the other side. If that's the Ohio affiliate's position, will not that create a situation for the Ohio representative on the national board? Because obviously they are going to be holding to a position that's 180 degrees the opposite, especially on this particular issue, to their national board and the national president.
I think you're probably right, but to be quite honest with you, this is exactly what I'm explaining. The Right to Life movement is the fact that we actually don't have to worry about what Mike Gonadakis has to do when he goes anymore, because we are completely autonomous. We will continue on with whether National Right to Life disaffiliates us with us or not. It makes absolutely, even if they decide to kick Ohio Right to Life before, I doubt they would, if they would make no difference to Ohio Right to Life. This is what National Right to Life has made a huge error in judgment here, because all this has done is opened up the door to see that National is only as strong as their local Right to Life groups are. If they start disaffiliating us with them from them, they have got absolutely zero power.
Well, let me ask you another question, Molly. I'm assuming that state chapters donate or remit maybe membership fees to National. Do the local affiliates have to remit any monies to the national organization?
Not a bean.
Okay. So basically, if they do it, it's voluntary.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I was just kind of wondering, because, you know, obviously this is one of those situations where, you know, it sounds to me like they're almost ready to cut off their nose to spite their face. That if they're trying to take this action against probably one of the strongest local chapters in the country, I want to applaud you, Molly, because, you know, I've watched and seen what you've been doing up in Cleveland for a number of years now, and that's probably one of the most effective grassroots organizations that I think I've ever seen. How you've built coalitions among various interest groups that are not just pro-life, but have a holistic viewpoint, and you've been building that through Greater Cleveland, which is not an easy ground to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So
if they really want to do that, I mean, you'd have to think that many of these other local chapters, especially the ones in Ohio that got a copy of that letter that they sent out, maybe sitting there thinking, well, wait a minute, what happens if we decide that we want to defend traditional marriage and protect against homosexual adoption and have a holistic viewpoint?
Yeah.
This could end up being quite a watershed the wrong way for the national organization.
Well, yeah. Let me give you, for instance, it's interesting what you said about creating a backlash, because about a year ago, 2 years ago, we were working on the heartbeat bill.
Yes.
Of course, Ohio Right to Life came out in opposition to the heartbeat bill as it was entered into the legislature, and I got a call from National. And National, basically, I told them, I said, you've lost me as a donor over the activity of your local, of the Ohio. And they said, well, you know, we have nothing to do with them. I said, well, where does National Right to Life stand? Well, we don't take a stand on that.
Yep.
Well, okay, then you're not getting any money.
Yeah.
And they were essentially repudiating. They weren't really repudiating. They were just basically disavowing any knowledge of their action, Mission Impossible. If any of your team are caught or killed, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. Well, that's essentially what happened. Their agent got caught or killed. He didn't get killed, but politically he did. And the secretary disavowed any knowledge of their actions. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing that I would say that a national group can't really stand if enough people come out and say, nope, we're not playing it that way.
Exactly.
They could be in trouble.
Exactly. And that's a very good point, Chuck, because what's happened on Cincinnati Right to Life and Cleveland Right to Life are the two big organizations. Cincinnati Right to Life, disaffiliated with Ohio Right to Life several years ago I don't know when they did it, but they are no longer part of Ohio Right to Life. They have not been part of National Right to Life for number of years, for a lot of years. And so now we've got Cincinnati Right to Life, who has a problem with National Right to Life. Cleveland Right to Life, who had no real problem. It's like, whatever, we'll help you with whatever you need to have to help you with. You know, as long as it's going to promote the cause, we'll do it. Now, the other big group that they've got in the state, they've said, no, we don't want you, smack on the wrist, you're not speaking nicely to our senators, so off you go. You know, this, where are they going to end up? They've just, the two largest right-to-life groups have now got cut ties with National. It's nuts. It just continues to amaze me. And maybe this is what, as you said, God takes things that are, you know, that seem to be totally out of control and moves them for his own glory. So I'm waiting. Wherever he wants us to go, that's where we need to go. So,
okay. Well, let's roll into a bit of a discussion here, if you will entertain this, about candidates. Because, you know, Senator Portman, and then you mentioned Jim Petra, who was a candidate for governor, and who's also been a state official here recently as the chancellor of the Ohio Board of Regents, the Higher Education Board. It seems to me that a number of prominent Republicans, especially, are starting to feel that it's okay for them to be able to come out and disavow their former pro-life or pro-family positions. Now, with Jim Petra, he supposedly switched from pro-choice to pro-life right before he was ready to run for the Republican nomination for governor of the state of Ohio back in 2006. But we also had, you know, with Rob Portman here, and honestly, let's just be quite frank about it, ladies and gentlemen, we're just a little over 2.5 years out from another presidential election where Rob Portman was the Ohio chairman for the Romney-Ryan team and who has held some aspirations himself for the top office in the country. Now, I think one of the things that we're seeing, I don't think this is so much of a heart change in candidates specifically, but, and Chuck and I have done some research on this, Molly, so you'll have to forgive us because we've got a little bit of background knowledge on this, but especially at the national level, the national Republican level, the party is actively courting large donors who have as one of their key policy issues the normalization of homosexual marriage and homosexual rights as a part of their qualifications for donating to the National Republican Party. One of the names that comes forward is a gentleman by the name of Paul Singer, who is a billionaire hedge fund manager in the state of New York, and who also happened to be the largest single contributor to both Paul Ryan and to Mitt Romney at the tune of $3.6 million for their presidential run, and a gentleman who, I remember the report correctly, Senator Rob Portman, as the National Senatorial Campaign Committee chairman, has been out to visit in the last few months.
Oh, interesting.
So what I'm thinking is, what we're looking at here is a question of whether money is causing money and the option of using money to buy votes. Let's just be quite honest about it. And I don't mean going out and handing people $5 to vote for you, but to put out yard signs and to do your lit and to run your television and to do all that, basically to garner your votes, is becoming more important to them than standing for what they say they believe in.
Yeah.
Well, if I remember right, wasn't Singer, before he was a big donor to Romney Ryan, was a big donor to Rick Santorum?
Yeah, he was also a donor to Rick Santorum and a number of others, but he also has spent a lot of money in the state of New York funding Republican candidates for their state assembly who were supporting homosexual rights. Now, he was pretty successful because what had happened in New York here recently? They voted to legalize same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do on the national level. Sheldon Adelson, who we've talked about because you heard that, you know, the candidates were going out to sea out in Las Vegas because he was a multi-billionaire. Newt Gingrich was like one of his favorites. Sheldon Adelson, one of his key policy points, normalizing homosexual behavior. You can go down the list of major party donors to the Republican Party, and by and large, what you're seeing is a trend toward them trying to cater to those donors who want homosexuality to be normalized in this country. That's the reason I think we're seeing what is otherwise a shocking change and such an abrupt change by somebody like Rob Portman. He wouldn't just come out and support his son. He came out and totally jettisoned his entire base in order to embrace something that there's only one good reason for him to do it.
Yeah.
And that is that you follow the money and figure out where the money's coming from.
You know, I this is all very interesting because I had no clue all of this is going on in the background. Barry, that's why both of you, I love talking with you guys because you have all this details. But the interesting thing that we need to remember here too, though, is that how much money did Romney have? You know, he had a lot of money. He had a lot of money putting into that, you know, that he put into the last couple of campaigns. I mean, this is how many times has he run for president? Three in total?
Yeah, at least two.
Yeah, at least two. So you consider how much money he's used. And yet every time, if the Christian base stays home, the conservatives do not get elected.
That's right.
And I know Michael Medved has an article today in the Wall Street Journal poo-pooing that idea, but I'm sorry, when the Christian base stays home, when the conservative, the social conservatives stay home, we are the ones that knock on the doors. We are the ones that walk door to door. We are the ones, they cannot pay us. What they look at is that they have lost sight of the fact that the Democrats can do this because they continue to build their base. They are actually appealing to their base. When the Republicans start to try to appeal to the Democrat base, they lose every single time.
That's absolutely the God's honest gospel.
Now,
Molly, you're right.
I have to laugh, Molly, because right before I came in to talk to you on the phone, I had to go to the post office because I'm a small businessman and I was doing a little shipping. And coming back in the car, I heard Michael Medved giving a little sort of thumbnail of his article in the Wall Street Journal, I think it is.
Yes,
Wall Street Journal. And essentially, he said that Ted Cruz needed to get better versed in recent history. And after I heard Medved's piece, I said, well, he needs to get better versed in recent history because what he said, he talked about all these people who were moderates and who were elected by these large margins. And I said, and everyone he mentioned didn't run as a moderate. They ran as a conservative.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I got out of the article. He's quoting people that might have been moderate behind the scenes, and that's where we all as social Christian conservatives have to get smart, Barry and Chuck. We've got to understand who these people are and stop being led around by our noses.
Exactly, and that's exactly, it's so great that you bring that point up after I listened to that, because I heard that and I'm like, well, Michael Medved doesn't seem to understand. Michael Medved's older than I am, but I remember very well the campaign of 1968 when Richard Nixon was running for president for the first time. He was not running as a moderate.
Yeah, yep, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that I've been trying to say to people as I've been talking about this issue, is that the days are gone, and the Republican Party better know that, and the Democrat Party better know it too if they try to come and woo us. The days are gone when certainly Cleveland Wright's life can be read. You know, there's no ring through our noses anymore. We are not going to vote for a candidate just because the Republican Party says they're good or the Democrat Party says they're good. We will no longer do that. We want to see exactly where they stand.
Well, and that's only wise because what we've had for too long, I think, and honestly, it's because of human nature, Molly.
Yeah.
And human nature is that a lot of people, if something's given to them, they're willing to take it.
Yeah.
But if they have to work for it, sometimes they just don't do it. And so what happens is the parties come out and they hand you the candidates. You know, you don't have to go out and study about them and figure out where they are and go to meetings and ask them questions. We'll just endorse them and tell you they're our slate and our guys, and you just come out as good little foot soldiers and, you know, go to knock on the doors and pick up the phones and make the voter ID calls and make the persuasion calls and come out and you know, if you can, give us some money, but that's okay because we're getting our money from the big boys. And let's get our people out and get our people out to vote. That's always the thing that I've always had a laugh about is how so many establishment liberal Republicans talk about getting our people out to vote, and I keep thinking to myself, yeah, and if you do that, you'll lose because your people don't represent the large percentage of the base of the Republican vote. It's the conservatives and the people of faith, and both fiscal and social conservatives, who are the base, but they need to learn that it's time that we take back control of our government.
Yep.
You know, we the people is not a cute phrase. It's a duty.
That's right.
It is a responsibility, especially as a Christian in this country, for us to be engaged and informed and to act upon our principles, not upon our party affiliation.
Exactly.
But I'll tell you, Molly, and you've seen this as well, because you and I have been in some of the same meetings.
Yeah.
Where it sounds good in May and June, but by the time you get to August and September and October, all of a sudden it's, we got to get behind our guys. And our guys were the same ones 6 months ago. They were saying, we're absolutely no way we can support these people.
Absolutely. I think there's enough of us right now, though, that have woken up to this. And I think these last two general elections have been a real eye-opener for those of us that understand how this works. And I will say that many of us are in leadership positions and we need to hold the line here.
Absolutely. And so, you know what, again, I think that there are so many silver linings in this dark cloud of this letter from National Right to Life that, you know, when I saw your press release come out about this, I sat there and thought to myself, wow, maybe the we've now reached the tipping point.
Yep.
Especially just in this state, at least, among many of these people who can no longer hide their eyes behind their hands and stick their fingers in their ears and go, nah, 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 don't tell me about the guy that I'm going to go vote for.
Yep.
They can't avoid it anymore.
Yep.
They can't avoid the fact that what they've been handed is a mess of pottage when their inheritance under God is supposed to be liberty and freedom, and biblical truth put forth in our civil sphere.
Now, you know what's funny about that, Molly? Barry did not hear my opening.
I got here late.
He wasn't here. He got here late, so he didn't hear me open with the mess of pottage in your heritage.
Exactly right. See, this is what I always laugh about, because, you know, here we are thinking we're doing it all ourselves. We're not, guys. It's all God in control. We just have to stay faithful. And at the end of the day, whether we appear to fail by the world, it doesn't really make any difference, as long as we're winning, you know, as long as we're winning our way to heaven, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know what? That's right. As long as we put our hand to the plow and we keep pointing in the direction God's got us pointed, we should be doing just fine. Well, Molly, we got about 10 minutes left, so I want to give you the opportunity to, because this obviously goes out, and we know we've got listeners in the Cleveland area, to talk a little bit about some of the things that Cleveland Right to Life is doing. I mean, not just the stuff that gets you disaffiliated from a non-affiliated organization, but all the other good things that you're doing. Your work up there, how many different organizations you guys are working with in tandem and arm to arm with, because I mean, it's breathtaking when you start talking about this, about how much of an influence your organization is God's allowing to have in that area.
Yeah. You know, I would love to do that. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I think what I would like to do, though, Barry, is to start off with just reading this actual letter for the listeners to let them understand why we are making such a fuss about it, because I think that really helps people to understand, you know, how really ridiculous this whole thing is. And then I will go into explaining as to what Cleveland Right to Life is. It says, this letter was posted on July the 17th, and it says, "Dear Molly, the mission of the National Right to Life Committee has been articulated since the inception of the organization to protect the rights of the innocent human beings, including those jeopardized by legal abortion, by euthanasia, and by assisted suicide. Recently, Cleveland Right to Life announced that it had embraced an advocacy agenda that includes issues beyond the right to life. Moreover, it promptly issued public criticism of and implicit political threats against a U.S. senator who has supported the right to life position on every vote that has come before the Senate, and who is a sponsor of major National Right to Life Committee-backed bills, because the chapter disagrees with his position on a non-right to life issue. By these actions, Cleveland Right to Life has violated National Right to Life policy, causing the chapter, which we are not, to disaffiliate itself from National Right to Life Committee. We respectfully insist that you remove from your website the claims that you are affiliated to National Right to Life Committee, and from this point forward, cease and desist from any representation that Cleveland Right to Life is affiliated with National Right to Life Committee. For life, Carol Tobias." Now, here's what Cleveland Right to Life is doing, which is just so silly. It's just so incredibly silly. Number one, we have always supported the family. Always supported the children and the family. We have one of the most successful material outreach programs in the city, in the county, called Treasures. It's out of our Treasures for Life resale store. So we have donations that come into the store. We sell those for almost nothing to people that can come in and buy it for whatever. It's very, very affordable. The proceeds from that goes to support a material assistance program, which is called Lifesavers Program. People from people that are from different social service agencies. We probably have about I think there's like 15 or 20 social service agencies, which is the majority, which is just about every social service agency in Cuyahoga County. Well, then refer their clients to us. We get clients from all over the place. We help them with. They might be coming out of prison. They might be on welfare and trying to get back into the job market. We provide them with clothing. The recent immigrants can come into our program and have small household items, knives, forks, pots, pans, you know, all of that. Children at the beginning of school terms, we've always supplied them with coats and school clothes. So for National Right to Life to say that we are stepping outside of the Right to Life agenda is absolutely nuts. We've been doing this for 25 years. So, you know, that's one of the programs we run. As I mentioned at the beginning to Chuck, we have our truth booth, which is in, I think the last count we're in about, and I lose count because it comes and goes. And I think we've been in about 26 states, and I think there's about four or five provinces. I can't remember the exact number. But that is a developing child in the womb, 3D, 4D video that just loops every 3 minutes. We put them up into malls. It's put up on a beautiful, beautiful display that goes into a mall. And we've had such incredible success with that. You know, saving human life, people calling and saying, we just saw the video. We were thinking of aborting. We're not doing that anymore. This is amazing. How can we get it? How can we get an ultrasound of our child? We do our, as I was talking about before, we've got our Bringing America Back to Life symposium, and I will be really expecting the two of you there in 2014, because it is amazing. We have, this year we probably have 20 nationally acclaimed speakers that will be there to present. We will have a dual track, one of where we will be doing presentations. We will have 6 meals, breakfast 2 days, lunches 2 days, and 2 gala dinners at the end. And in between there's presentations, and concurrently running with that, we will have workshops. So you can go to, for example, you can go to a presentation on adoption, for example, and then in the afternoon you can go to a workshop that will teach pregnancy centers how to promote adoption within their pregnancy center, that type of a thing. So as you can see, and it goes on and on. We have an incredible youth group that actually, again, through the youth group knowing who we were, came to us and said to us, there's about 40 of us. We want to form a youth group. Can we do it under Cleveland Right to Life? We said, absolutely, sure. Come along in. They are now part of our organization. They're called Cleveland Minutemen for Life. They are down in front of the clinics. They pray every the first Saturday of every month in front of the clinics. They just a dynamic group of young kids. Oh, I just love these kids. They're blogging, they're Twittering and Facebooking, and it's just awesome. I love them. They're a real great group of them. They are the next generation. And interestingly enough, they sent us an email almost immediately saying, you go for it, Molly. This is exactly where we need to go when we changed our statement. So, you know, I think on all different levels, I really feel that this will pass, and I think we're going to see a lot of Right to Life groups doing what we're doing.
Well, and I hope that that's the case, Molly. As you know, I'm a member of Ohio Pro-Life Action, and we are definitely in accord with everything that you're doing at Cleveland Right to Life. You know, our mission statement also has support for traditional marriage and family in it as well, and we're hoping that between all of us that we can actually get people to understand the holistic value supporting all pro-life and pro-family issues together.
Yeah.
I think it's just fantastic. Now, you know, you have an invitation for Chuck and I to come up to the 14 seminar. Just send us the dates, and we will put it on our calendar.
Absolutely.
We'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have you there.
Now, Molly, if people want to get a hold of you in order to volunteer or to donate to Cleveland Right to Life or anything else, how can they get a hold of you?
Go to our website, and we have several, actually, but this is the best one to go to, clevelandrighttolife.org. Very simple, clevelandrighttolife.org.
Now, remember, ladies and gentlemen, you will not see any logos for National Right to Life on clevelandrighttolife.org. So don't go out there looking for them. Now, Molly, you know what? You might actually want to take them one step further. I haven't been over to your website. Maybe you've done this already. I would post a photocopy of the letter from National Right to Life on my front page.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would just stick it right up there and just say, well, we're not saying we're affiliated.
You know what? Several people have suggested that, and it's like, you know what? I'm going to just let this die its natural death. And I think that in the long term, everybody's going to come around to see that this is the way we need to go. So that's my prayer, you guys. I really pray that that's where we go.
Well, excellent. Well, Molly, we want to thank you for taking your time today. I know that ever since this broke, you've been very busy with lots of requests, but you know, we are honored that you were willing to come on with us, even through the technical difficulties of some of the Skype issues that we have, which is fairly regular for our program with guests, but we're working that out. But we are honored by your presence. We're honored by your stand, and we want to just say that our prayers are with you. And you have our support in this, and anytime that you need to get any information out or we need some help, then we'd be more than happy to have you come on and share with us again.
Thank you so much, both of you. And it's always been such a pleasure to work with you, Barry and Chuck. It's great to make your acquaintance via Skype.
You as well.
Excellent.
Thank you.
God bless you, Molly.
God bless you guys, too. Thank you. God bless everybody out there.
Thank you.
Right, thanks.
We give thanks to Molly, and we'll ask you to, if you are interested in this and want to see some of the things that are available, some more information, go to our website, www.principledpolicy.com. We'll have this show archived in relatively short order, and we'll post some of the links. We'll especially post a link to Cleveland Right to Life. And again, join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.